This is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour. Last Friday, we had the gremlins really playing games with this whole line for the whole hour. It kept disconnecting us and reconnecting us. And at one point, there was even something that sounded like gremlins laughing electronically on the line. And they finally had to put it over on another line that's more secure. So tonight they said we're on the secure line in case the gremlins want to start playing again. So let's hope everything is okay. All right, I have a guest tonight, and the guest is in New Zealand. And I'm going to give out the toll-free number if anybody wants to call in. And I think you might, because this man would not be able to answer some of your questions. But let's give the toll-free number in case anyone does want to call in tonight. The number is 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. And I'm talking to Blair in Wellington, New Zealand. Blair, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello, how are you?
I wasn't sure because whether the little gremlins were going to let us talk tonight or not.
Well, I was a bit worried myself because on Tuesday, everything on my computer just went dead. And not just that, but the two phone lines where I'm sitting here, they all went dead as well. So I had to get the telecom person in here yesterday to reconnect everything.
So you have the little gremlins in New Zealand also?
Well, I think there were rather big gremlins this weekend rather than little ones.
Okay, you got a big one. Blair, I never know how to pronounce your last name. Is it Styra?
It's correct, it's Styra. It's Ukrainian.
Okay, Styra, because I never was sure. This is Blair Styra. And I like to call you a psychic. I know you don't really think you are, but I put you in that category. I know you're a channeler.
That's all right. You can do that.
Is it okay if I say either one?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, because I consider Blair to be the best psychic and channeler in New Zealand. Bar none, because I've met him several times now, and he is really very, very good. That's why I meant if there was anybody who wants to call in and ask questions tonight, I'm sure he'd be able to help you. But I met Blair about 5 years ago when I first went to New Zealand, and he is very remarkable. He did a reading for me then, and I just returned from Australia, New Zealand, and I was with Blair again in October. And he did another reading for me then, and he is very accurate. He knows things that, for me anyway, nobody else could know except my family. And he channels an entity he calls Tabash. And he's very famous in New Zealand. He does readings, and he does talks and lectures. And Blair, you do readings for people all over the world, don't you?
That's correct, yes. Over the last, I've been channeling Tabash publicly for around 17 years, and my work has taken me into the UK, obviously New Zealand. I have worked a little bit in France and obviously in Australia as well.
Yeah.
And it's a bit like Spirit says to you, you know, go to a place and you take yourself there, and sometimes I have absolutely no idea how it's going to work out, but it always seems to.
Mm-hmm. Because you said that you were, it's been a long time, but you started out just being, what, tell us how you really began. Let's do it that way. Before
all right, well, I think I've always had a connection with what I'll just call the God energy. And, I mean, I had a normal growing up period. I was actually born in Canada, and my family immigrated to New Zealand in the early 70s.
Yeah.
And looking back in retrospect, I realized that that was a poignant moment for me and the changes in who I was as a spiritual being, and you know, just living a normal everyday existence, etc. And it was through my wife actually getting cancer that I started looking at the spiritual part of me in a really strong way, because at the time it wasn't a very good prognosis. So we started looking at concept of life and death and where she was going to go. But it really changed our whole understanding and perspective of the formula of life, and I realized that consciously there was the mind, the body, and the spirit. And so by embracing the spiritual aspect of myself, or as I like to call it, the Godness in me, then I realized that by bringing that in, it made the formula complete. And so therefore, it just enhanced my life. And I mean, at the time, I wasn't thinking about doing anything like this as a job as such. In fact, if anyone had sort of said that to me, I would have said, oh, look, the elevator doesn't go to the top floor if you think that. And so it just sort of happened and unfolded, and I realized more and more that the more I read, the more I connected up with the idea of my Godness, then the more it was helping me understand that I was a multidimensional being of energy. And then little by little, things started to shift a little bit more. I started realizing that, you know, the ideas that I had about myself as a human being were changing so much that it was changing my perception of what I could be, what I could do. And again, still not thinking that, you know, I'm going to be doing spiritual work. And we had made a trip overseas. We were in the UK. And while we were away, my mother-in-law had passed away. And shortly after that, my wife and I had a feeling to visit the Spiritualist Church in Belgrave Square in London. So we went along, and there was a medium there, and he came up to my wife and he gave her the most extraordinary message from my mother-in-law, which was very accurate. Mm. And then as he was about to sit down, he stopped and he turned around and he says, oh, no, I have to come to you. And he came to me and he said, Spirit wants to tell me about your career choices. Now, I was actually considering at some point going into the medical career. And so what he said to me was that I see two rooms. One room is a room, and I see a big building, and it's got a red cross over it, and I just thought, well, that's a hospital. But then he said, the next room, I see a big room full of light. Huh. And I had no idea what he was talking about at that point. But I thought, oh, well, it's a room of light. But he said, whatever you choose of these rooms, you're going to excel in. Anyway, we finished our travels, came back to New Zealand, and I was just flicking through the paper one day, and I just saw this little tiny advertisement for a woman who was a channel, and she was doing a public meeting in Wellington. So we went along to this meeting, and she channeled at the time the Egyptian goddess Isis. And the information that was coming through was really amazing and extraordinary. It seemed to really resonate to me. Anyway, at some half point through the meeting, Isis suddenly stopped and she stared at me, and she pointed at me and she says, you are a channel. Because I looked behind me thinking she must be talking about someone else behind, and she went, no, you. And so anyway, I had a bit of a chat afterwards and ended up doing some of the workshops that Isis was running. And it's through those connections that I got more and more in tune with the spirit. And it was through Isis that I was introduced to Tabash. And it was actually in one of her workshops that Tabash actually came through me for the very first time. We had been doing some energy work, and I just basically went into a spontaneous trance. And what happened was I was just standing there, and then suddenly the next moment I was flat on my back, and then I became unconscious. And apparently what had happened was that Tabash had come through, but he was disorientated. He hadn't been used to being in a body. And even though there were people, about 40 people in the seminar, Tabash gave his first public discourse to the wall because he wasn't sure where everyone was.
So it was totally unexpected whenever it finally did come through the first time.
Oh, absolutely. And apparently Tabash and Isis were speaking in some language, and then eventually they went into English. And then from that point on, I just started developing the energy. My connection with Tabash got stronger and stronger. And from that point on, he started really directing me and guiding me in certain mind and body and spirit disciplines to enhance the process of bringing the energy through. And so with this process, it just allowed me to let my physiological system get used to working with the energy. And then a year later, or fast forward a bit here, after doing a lot of meditation and a lot of looking at myself and shifting and changing and basically peeling the layers off, Tabash announced that he wanted to do a public meeting. So at this point, I had absolutely no idea what he was going to be like, what he was going to say, anything like that. It was a real stab in the dark, really. So I hired a room and thinking, well, maybe 10 people are going to come. Well, 100 people actually showed up.
Oh, well.
And so I remember thinking, well, you know, just go and do it, basically. And it seemed to work because, you know, here I am sort of 16, 17 years later. We've run big public meditation teaching evenings here in Wellington and other places. We had our own radio program for a couple of years. We've done the seminars and the one-on-ones, etc. And I mean, obviously, you know, this isn't just about my service to humanity. It's also about my service to myself in the way that I'm evolving through the work that I'm doing, as you well know yourself.
I think it's interesting where you said that in the very beginning, that first time that Dabash and Isis were talking in a different language to each other.
Yes.
And
absolutely. And
whatever, never you.
And
had,
I think they understood each other.
You have known Dabash for so long now. What was his connection with ISIS? I don't remember you saying anything about that before.
I don't think he had any particular connection with ISIS. I think it was just the, let's say, connection between the souls. And I suppose for her, she was a trigger in opening me to this energy.
I thought maybe they had come from...
Yeah, they were just basically gods out there doing their thing, I think.
I thought maybe they'd come from...
Who knows? Maybe they had a thing going on another level.
Well, I thought maybe they came from the same time period. But what was it you were to find out about Dabash on his background as an entity?
Well, in the early stages when I first started connecting with him, he told me that he came from Sumeria, which, of course, was part of the ancient Mesopotamian Empire. Dabash goes back about 5,000 B.C., of the time that he was alive, he was a normal man of his time. He had wife, job, children. He was a man who had a small estate, small farm, but he was also a merchant dealing, as he has told me, in sort of jewelry. And he would go on his journeys around the area. Recently, I've just made a trip to Oman, and Dabash told me that he had being himself there, so it was part of his old stomping ground. So it was quite interesting in my travels there recently, thinking about this, and I really did get the feeling and the connection, and I could really picture in my mind just how it would have been, because I don't think some of the areas of Oman have changed much in that period of time, so it's probably pretty much the same. And it was in that life that he lived that he became more connected with the idea of his godhood through his own experiences, and so it just enabled him to enhance what his life was at that time and the connections that he had with people. He wasn't a big teacher or a guru or anything like that of that time. He was just, I suppose, just a bloke in a body just doing his thing, really.
Well, I think that would have been interesting to return to that area. Did you yourself have any feelings of deja vu or anything?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Oman's an extraordinary place, and you know, when you think about its own history, it goes back about 12,000 years from what we know. And as we were going through our journey and travels, I found particularly as I was driving up into the mountain areas, a great sense of peace and knowingness just came upon me. I didn't have any big flashing memories or anything like that, but I did at one stage get a very, very clear picture of a life I had had where I was obviously a man of the mountains, and I could just see this man just sitting on the edge of an outcrop of rock, just looking at the view and just basically being a part of life. Mm-hmm. And it's a very quiet, peaceful energy in that part of the world. Regardless of the madness that's going on around Oman, itself, it seems to be a very harmonious heart place, basically. And it really did thrill me to think that, you know, Dabash had been in that part of the world, and it just seemed to enhance my feelings and ideas and connections with his energy, etc.
Uh-huh. But I think it was amazing, too, when you first started this, that it was a big surprise, and then you did have so many people come to the first time. You didn't know what was going
absolutely.
To happen that day when you first started out.
I find that as a channel, you know, every day it's a bit like, well, what's going to be created now? And you know, learned very much to just, you know, trust the energy, trust the process, and realize that, yes, we are all multidimensional. So even though it was a surprise to me what's happened, looking back, I realized that the feeling I've always had about it and God and all that was, I suppose, the best way to describe it was just to say, well, of course, what else could there be? And it's always felt really natural to me in that sense.
That's what I found when we were in Wellington. You know, we did the talk together that night in Wellington.
Yes.
And we had, I think you said there were over 200 people that came that night. It was a full hall. And I did my talk, and then you did yours, and Tomas came in, and it was just blended together really well. It was very natural.
Well, the harmony between, it was just extraordinary. And, I mean, you know, people have just keep saying to me, well, when's Dolores coming back? We need to hear more from her.
So there were a lot of people.
Looks like you're going to have to make a bigger journey back here, a longer journey at some point.
Well, there were a lot of people that thought we had rehearsed it that night because it just all blended together so naturally. But we didn't.
Yes,
we didn't know what each other was going to say. But
no, I mean, when you think about it, we hadn't seen each other for just about 5 years.
Yeah.
And we met the night before. So I think this is the thing. It's like when you think about two people, two energies, it's like you get an equation and it just flows.
Yeah.
And you know, that's what happened. And I think more and more of that sort of thing's actually happening all over the world, you know, as people make certain connections with understandings and beliefs, truths, etc. You know, they're really understanding that there's all these formulas that are going on. And obviously, you know, through trial and error, you know, you connect up with some people that the formula doesn't seem to work either. And that could be a work thing or a relationship thing or whatever. It's still about formulas.
Yes.
I think that the formula between us seems to work quite well.
I know what you mean. But I remember that night when Tabash came through for the audience, it was so natural. He is so funny, and he's very, he just communicates so wonderfully with the audience. So I think
he's quite a showman, as you know. But the thing is about Tabash, it's like he's so human through my body that it's probably hard for some people to discern that's this entity actually channeling through me. And it wasn't always like that in the early stages of working with him. The way that he used my body, there was very little animation in the body. The eyes were closed. He would just stay very, very still, and he would just talk. Then gradually, as my physical body adapted to his frequencies, then he became a lot more animated. And in the early stages, I'll tell you some funny stories. When Tabash started coming through me more consciously and more fully, he announced one day to my wife that in order for my body to get used to being with his energies more, Tabash actually wanted to have a day in the body.
The whole day?
And so Kay, my wife, was saying, a day in the body? God, how am I going to entertain him all that time? What am I going to do? So what they ended up doing was they went for a walkabout, and, you know, Wellington is quite a compact city, so it's easy to walk to places. So they actually walked up the road to the zoo, and so Tabash had a little bit of a wander around the zoo and was apparently talking to the animals and things of that nature. But a few people had discovered this was going to happen, so we had a bit of an entourage with us, following us around wherever we were going.
Yeah,
but on the way back, we went through this little town area, and Tabash decided that, you know, because I had missed out on the day, he wanted to reward me. So he stopped off at this shop, and he bought about 14 orchid plants. And so when I got back into my body, I found these orchid plants. But, of course, the thing is, he paid for them with my credit card. So I bought my own present.
But I can see the people following you around, too, wanting to know what was going to happen.
Well, that would be an interesting experience. And we've taken him to places like supermarkets and things. And in a very loud voice, he announces, you know, what not to eat and all that sort of stuff. And I remember one woman who was a bit confused because there's some prices of a cheese that were not the same as what had been in the newspaper, and she was bemoaning the fact, and she'd been talking to Tabash about this and not knowing that it was a channeled entity. And apparently he turned to her and just said, well, you humans are very good at confusing yourselves.
Well, one thing about Tabash, he is very honest. He will say so.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah. And that's what I like about him. He's blunt, to the point. Clearly in your face, but that's just his delivery, and he's not going to beat around the bush. And, you know, the thing I love about him, too, is he doesn't talk about a whole lot of ambiguous New Age nonsense. He gets into the core of, you know, how it works and what it's all about. But also I think it's important that people still understand they've got their free will to define what they actually do with the information. So I don't expect anyone to ever take what he says as the gospel truth according to him. And
that's
so it's just his opinion based on his observation.
They're a free will to make their own decisions.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I think too many people
does it
perhaps
feel like when he does take over the body and does the channeling, where do you separate, don't you? You go somewhere else, don't
that's
you?
That's correct. Yep.
Yeah, what is that?
The best way I define it is, if you imagine when you're watching television, you're on one specific station and that's the program you're watching, but that doesn't mean all the other stations don't exist, they're just on different frequencies. So if one imagines that a channel is a person who's able to just basically push the remote and move on to another station. And so that's what I do. I move away from Radio Blair and I move out onto Radio Higher Consciousness, if you like. And so Tabash borrows the signal, so he tunes into my frequency. And
uh-huh.
So when I channel, I close my eyes, I just go through a little phrase in my thoughts, which allow me as Blair to vacate the premises, so to speak. And then it's a bit like I close my eyes and I'm opening another level of my consciousness on another level. And so I go to a place. It's always the same place I go to first. And I see what's like a little Eastern palace. It's the best way I can describe it. If I stay inside, I go into one of the rooms where I meet up with my spirit guides and teachers, and I'm taught truths, understandings, etc. There are times when I go outside, and when I do that, again, I meet up with teachers, or I actually get sent on missions. And just as an example, just recently in one of my missions, my spirit was actually sent to a man in New York, and he was contemplating suicide. So my mission was to influence his energies, to lift his consciousness so that he could feel better and realize that there were other choices and other options. And I mean, this is happening all over the place with not just channels and psychics and mediums, but I think that as people, I think we're working on all sorts of levels all the time. And, you know, we do this in our sleep states. We're out there perhaps sending peace and harmony and balance, or working through our stuff, etc. So it's not like you're going out there and hovering around on a cloud and eating grapes or something.
Well, that's what I found in my
work. Definitely put to work.
Yeah, I found that in my work, too, that people are doing work in their sleep state and they don't remember anything about it. But they're off helping. A lot of them say they're helping people cross over. Or especially if there are disasters, when there's a lot of people leaving the planet at once, a lot of people are doing work in the sleep state, escorting them and make sure they're going to the right place. But, you know, when they wake up, they have no memory that they've done any of this work.
Yeah. That's so probably just as well sometimes. You know, I don't think some people could probably cope with some of the things that we're doing out there on other dimensions.
It'd be very confusing because we have to focus on this life anyway.
Mm.
But then when you're off doing these things, is it like a signal or something that you have to come back into the body when it's time?
Yeah. What happens is I usually find that it's like a vibration, a vibrational pull, and it's not even like a thought process. It's just because out there there's no time, it doesn't exist, so one just finds oneself just suddenly moving from that consciousness back into another place. And it is interesting because I know, and you'll note this too, that over the last year, the vibrational energy is altering in a very extraordinary way. Things are transforming as we become more integrated in mind, body, and spirit. And so what I'm finding is when I come back, and I really feel like I've been way somewhere far, and it's just taking a little bit more to sort of come back into being clear in my conscious state. And the people have been saying to me that the my body, and it does this a lot, my body glows when I channel with spirit.
Yeah.
And apparently this is getting more and more. And when I've asked Tabash about this, his reply was, well, when you channel or when you attune to spirit or frequencies, what you're basically doing is yet you're pulling God's light through your body. And because the energy of God is getting stronger on this planet, what's happening is that, you know, we're glowing more, and I think a lot of people are actually realizing this. A lot of people are heating up at nights more because we're actually pulling more of the power of life through us in an unconditional way.
Yeah.
And
but, you know,
it's
Blair,
a great thing because it's just
You know, Blair, some people have said when they've seen me lecture, they see me glow. And
yeah, absolutely.
I see the change. They said while I'm doing lecturing. So
yeah. I remember some years ago, a woman came to see Tabash, and she was part of the production team of that TV program called Touched by an Angel that used to be on.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
And when Tabash came through, of course, the body started glowing, and the woman in her American voice said, "Oh, my God, you're just like Monica." But she said, you're without the light behind you. You know, you've got it inside of you. So I'm going around carrying my own key lights within me, you see.
But anyway, whenever it's time for you to come back, it's like reorienting yourself. I mean, you said it's like a change in vibration. It just pulls you back into the body, or what?
Yeah, it's not like a feeling I have, but it's just suddenly, again, I'm opening my eyes and I'm back into my body. And, you know, when you have a sense of yourself as a multidimensional being of energy, I think it's actually quite easy to just flick back into the station. In the early days when my body wasn't quite used to that, there were a few times when it was a bit like a crash landing, and so my body would jerk in quite a major way. And I remember at one time I found that I was sort of half in my body but half out. And so there's part of me that was sort of flopping around, and the other part was just sitting up in the chair. So it must have been a bit bizarre for the client. There's always a bit of fine-tuning that you need to do in the early stages of anything like this.
Yeah, so that's why I think this is not something for people to play around with anyway.
A lot of people, I think everybody can channel, and obviously there's lots of different ways that people can do that. But, you know, many people have actually said to me, "Oh, I really want to learn how to channel like you." And, you know, my reply to that is, well, it's obviously my karma to channel in the way that I do. I've chosen to do it in this way.
Yeah.
And even though I believe everyone can channel, it may not be your karma to do it in this particular way. And so you've got to go to your inner self and think, well, if I can do this, what is the best way that will serve me? And I don't think people want to give up their consciousness and let some other energy come into their body.
Well, it's not something you would be able to teach anybody.
You know? No, I don't think it is. I think it's like anything. You have these natural aptitudes. And, you know, when you see people advertising workshops for channeling your spirit guides and all that sort of stuff, then it's not that I'm dubious about it, but it's just like I hope they don't get disappointed if it's not their karma to be able to do that.
But anyway, whenever you come back in, is it disorienting at first?
No, it only takes about 5 seconds to click back in. Always now, I feel really, really energized and really empowered because, you know, when you're out there in an unlimited space, you know, you're attuning to the most extraordinary life power. And I bring that back into my body. And of course, with the ingestion of Tabasha's energies as well, you put that together and you just feel, I'll call it manic with power. You feel absolutely extraordinary. And at the end of the day, you know, when I finish my work, I've got to go out there and do something physical or go to the gym or I'll go for a run or a swim. And that's good because that's a very human grounding thing for me. But I've got to do something with this energy in my body. Otherwise, you end up sort of feeling like you're a spinning top going round and round.
Well, you said, too, that when you're doing, like, with the audiences and everything, people come up to you and talk to you about what you already spoke about, and you don't remember any of it anyway.
No, I'm an unconscious channel. I suppose in the old Victorian speak, they would have called me a full trance channel. But, so basically Blair has absolutely no idea of what is said. And I remember some years ago I was interviewed in a magazine here in New Zealand, and the reporter actually asked me, well, do you think that you could choose to be a conscious channel, or could you, as Blair, not as a channel, could you be a therapist in the way Tabash is? And I said, oh, no, I couldn't possibly do that, because I just wouldn't want to carry around all people's issues. And you know, obviously, you know, in the work that I do, as you know yourself, you deal with people's traumas and you know, a lot of people go through some awful stuff, and the last thing I'd want to do is feel that I've got to carry around other people's energies. I really don't know how conscious therapists do it. and I don't think I could sleep at night with some of the tragedies and traumas that people go through.
Well, that's the way with mine. I have to shut it out. When I leave the client, I don't even remember afterwards. You know, I just forget everything about it. You have to do that.
I don't think that's being insensitive to people. I just think it's a form of self-preservation in a sense.
Because I know some people, they carried all these problems around in their head all the time, and you couldn't function.
When I think about what some people do carry with them, it makes you wonder about, well, it makes you realize the resilience of human nature. But I think also it makes you feel really grateful for, you know, who you are and how you are in your life. And I think it's so important to remember that regardless of our circumstances and situations, we actually do have choice.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the areas that we work in, I work a lot with people who are dying. And, you know, I've talked to young teenagers who will never see adulthood. And, you know, at times when I'm driving home and sort of thinking about this, it's like, wow, you know, here's a young man who's never going to experience manhood or never going to experience, you know, the doors that he could open up for himself. And it really makes you look at yourself and think, well, you know, thank God that you know, I have my choices and I can move on with things.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I understand that it's people's karma, whatever their realities are, but, you know, it still brings to home sometimes people's issues. And, you know, it does make you feel grateful for who you are, where you are in your life, and knowing that, you know, you're doing the steering.
Yeah, and that's what I've found. You can't fix everybody. You can do the best you can, and then it's up to the person.
Yeah, and I think anybody who works in this field in whatever area it is, you know, you can't really look at it from a point of you're the answer. And I like the way Tabash puts it. He says, look, you know, spirit's not the answer. We're just a stimulant. And then we're there to stimulate something in you which opens you up to yourself. And basically, he's there to stimulate the God in us so that, therefore, the human in us can take that on board and, therefore, thrive in a greater way. And if people always look for the answers in spirit or their therapists or whatever, then they're just going to keep going round and round and round and never really knowing what they can actually be. Whereas if they take on board the idea that they're going to create the world that they live in, then they realize that it's not about who is or what is going to be revealed to them. I think it's more about they're the revelation. So therefore, if they see themselves in that sense and they realize they can create a greater reality for themselves, be it mind, body, or spirit.
Mm-hmm. That's what I tell people. You create your own reality. And if you don't like what's in your life, you can uncreate it. You can make a whole new scenario, a whole new script. You can do it.
Don't you think some people find that really difficult, particularly when they look back on some of the realities they've created? And it's like, you mean I created that pain or I created that financial distress, etc.? I think for a lot of people that's a really, really difficult thing to grasp.
Because I work a lot with physical problems, and they say, well, I don't want to be sick. What do you mean? But you create it. You make yourself sick. And then
absolutely.
You know, what's the reason? Why did you do it? And then we can set about taking it away if they're ready to release it. Some people really don't. They want to hang on to these things. But then...
Yeah. And I think they...
We can't do anything then. Here, go ahead.
No, well, of course not. Yeah, well, that comes down to the free will again, doesn't it? If your free will determines that you choose to be ignorant or sick or unhappy or whatever, then one has to respect that. You're still God, but you're just doing it that way, basically. At least it's nice to know that you've got the choices.
Because even after I've had the sessions with people and the illness or whatever it is, the symptoms, the pain is gone. Well, the next day they'll say, yeah, but that's too good to be true. I know it'll come back.
And then so what do? They bring it back or they create another issue.
Yeah, it goes somewhere else in the body. Because they haven't really come to terms with it or worked it out.
I remember when you were doing your talk here in Wellington and you were talking about forgiveness and the need to be able to really forgive so that therefore you can clear all the old energy. And I think that's so important and so applicable in this time in history because not just in the sense of other people or circumstances, but perhaps our need to forgive ourselves for what we've actually gone through and really, really mean it, not just sort of say it as, like, have a nice day, but I really, truly, absolutely, and totally forgive myself, mind, body, and spirit.
Yeah. That's what I tell people. They carry all this baggage and garbage around with them, and it's time to let it go. It makes them sick.
You know, Dolores, I think more than this time in history, what you just said is so applicable. And, you know, as we've moved more and more into this, we'll call it the mind-body-spirit equation, it really is about, right, well, we are creators now, not resolvers. And for those who are still resolving, well, then, you know, they're just going to get stuck in a very dense energy and just go round and round in circles. And, okay, inevitably, I think their spirits will see the light, so to speak. But then there are so many people who are really being the light and getting on with the reality that I'm a creator and that's who I choose to be from this moment on, basically.
Mm-hmm. But if they don't get rid of all this stuff and forgive people and forgive themselves, they got to come back and do it again. So they might as well do it.
Yeah, well, exactly.
You know, they might as well get rid of it.
But I think that's difficult for people. I think sometimes some people might think, oh, well, if I can come back and do it again, well, I'll wait till then. In the meantime, I'll just stay miserable.
Well, that's their choice anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
But
who are we to argue with them?
Well, I know you do have a lot of private sessions, and you do a lot by telephone, too, don't you?
I don't do a lot by telephone. What I tend to do, because I'm so busy with the one-on-ones here, and I think being with Tabash, it's better having a real personal experience with him. What I do is that with some clients who have seen Tabash and know him, then at times I will permit the odd telephone consultation.
What I do is,
you know, during the morning, I put some time aside here in New Zealand where people have been to see Tabash, and this is just a free service I offer. They can just pick up the phone, and if they have a quick question, they can just run it by him, and he'll just give them the information. And at times, you know, a bit of email stuff now and then, etc. But I try to keep that fairly minimal because, you know, it's my time and energy too. So even though this is my vocation, so to speak, I still got to create Blair time as well.
Yeah.
So I prefer not to do too many telephone consultations.
Well, I was thinking if people were in other countries wanted to contact you, if you would. If you do it over the phone.
Yeah. Well, no, it would be. It'd have to be a one-on-one sort of stuff. So it's like I say, I'm busy here in Wellington without having to sort of keep the phone line so busy at this time, which I know is a bit of a nuisance. But you got to draw the line somewhere.
Yeah. But during the day, how many people do you see then?
It's usually 4 a day, I 4 to 5. Any more than that, it actually sort of sends me off the planet slightly. There have been times where, obviously, I've done seminars where I'm channeling all day, but that's a little bit different because when that happens, spirit sets up a sort of a collective energy, which somehow assists the process and it makes it different. But to do it, if I did like 10 people, you know, in one day, then I'd be completely off the planet, and it would take me a couple of days to recover, probably. But you also, I mean, don't forget, too, and you know this yourself, you know, when you're dealing with separate people, you're dealing with separate energies all the time. And so, you know, that does have an effect on your energies, you know. If you have a client who is sitting here sobbing through the whole session, well, on some level, your physical body is going to pick up their distress. So you have to be quite disciplined in yourself in regards to, you know, how you do your own emptying hours and not taking on board other people's energies.
Yeah. Well, so you would do maybe one or two, or then you would take a break anyway before you'd see some more?
Well, I always have half an hour in between each client, and that just allows me to just chill out a little bit.
Uh-huh. Because you said at the end of the day that you have to go and do something physical to ground yourself.
Oh, absolutely, because you get that build-up of energy. And, you know, you just, like I said, you've got to go and be productive with it. And it's actually quite amazing because sometimes you feel you have this extraordinary superhuman strength. And there have been times when I've gone to the gym and I'm doing a workout with my gym partner, and I will lift weights that I wouldn't normally be able to. And he's just sort of sitting there looking at me and he goes, I don't know how you do this. And as I said, well, if you think about it, when you think you can, you do. But if you think you can't, well, then you don't, basically.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
Yeah, yeah. And even though he knows who I am and what I do and all that sort of thing, I can see in his brain he's still trying to figure this all out and how it all works.
Okay. Well, we still got a little more time here. I was wondering if you have any more stories you wanted to tell. Any cases?
Well, it's not so much a story, but it's more like probably a message to everyone that is actually listening at this particular time. And, you know, I'm just picking up information now from Spurred as I'm saying this, is that if you think about this time in history, this is a time where, if you like, we really get it. And when I mean get it, I mean we get the whole idea that we are a formula, and that formula is made up of the mind, the body, and the spirit. So this is a time in history where we are integrating the energy of life, and the formula of life is best created from the idea of the God energy in us. So we could say that the God in us is simply the highest part that actually exists. And so it doesn't mean that we have to establish some big major practices in a sense. I think that often just through the way we run our everyday life as mind, body, spirit is actually enough. And I think that if our minds or our bodies or our spirits need to do a little bit of extra, well, then that's when we get a sense of, oh, I must visit a psychic or a channel or do a seminar or have a regression or physically I must change my diet, etc. But mostly I think it's just through what we do in our everyday lives that assists us in staying attuned. And the way I do it personally is, you know, when I wake up in the morning, my first thought is I have always been God, mind, body, and spirit. And then I get up and I go through my morning ritual. And while I'm doing that, I just think in my thoughts, in my world today, I'm focused, I'm healthy, I'm clear, I'm whatever. And through the day, I just try to stay connected with that energy without feeling that I'm always having to do big major things all the time. And I think that human nature feels that they've got to always be doing something important or making some major physical, mental, structural change or whatever in their lives to feel that they're evolving. Whereas I think our evolution should be just our intent through our day. If we can live our lives knowing we are God, knowing that we are the masters of who we are, then that makes it so much easier. And I think people put a lot of pressure on themselves, feeling that they've got to become something or do something or give up something. And you know, so a lot of the self-development stuff is costing people a lot of money. And I think to a certain point, you know, we have to go and do things. But I think it's a lot cheaper if you go to yourself sometimes.
That's true.
Well, it is, truly. And, you know, you don't have to spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars in trying to get it. Whereas it's cheaper if you just go to yourself and think, oh, well, there I am. There's the answer. And so, but again, I think a lot of people think, oh, no, you know, I've got to pay $5,000 to do that seminar, and then everything will be okay. And what happens when it's not?
Yeah.
And, you know, you see people going to, you know, they do a lot of guru hopping or seminar hopping, looking, this time I'll get it, this time it's going to happen. I've got friends who do this on all sorts of levels. And you know, you look at them and you think about, you know, I've got one friend who I know has spent $100,000 on all sorts of self-development stuff. And they have not moved on in their lives because they're not going to themselves. I mean, that's just their journey and all that sort of thing, basically.
Well, I think
it's
the same thing of wanting somebody to fix you, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel really privileged in the position that I have created for myself here because, you know, I've met the most extraordinary people in my own journey, and not just from a spiritual perspective, but from all levels. And I never forget to think that we are all mirrors of each other. And so, you know, whenever I bring a new person into my life, I always sort of think, all right, well, how is this person myself? Because we are always looking for ourselves all the time. And so we do this by the dynamics of our relationships. And I think if we can be really, really honest within ourselves in that sense, then it just gives us such a great opportunity to discover more, reveal more. And I think of what Tabash says at the end of our meetings. He will always say to the audience, always say hello to someone that you've never met before, because you never know when you may be resolving something, or you may never know that you may be giving someone life just by saying hello. And I think daily we have all these wonderful opportunities to be able to serve each other without having to do anything major. It could just be a smile we give to somebody, or it could just be, you know, chatting away as you walk down the street with a stranger. But you know, people have become so afraid to do that, and everyone's put up their walls and their barriers all over the place. And I was reading something the other day, and it said, isn't it funny that man can put a man on the moon, but you can't go across the road and say hello to your neighbor?
I thought that
about sums humanity up.
Yeah, that really makes sense, too. Because, yeah, that's what...
People, you know, they read these...
I was afraid you were cut off there. You go ahead,
things.
People are raising money.
Yeah, but they never seem to really put it into practice. You know, we can get stimulation and all that in all sorts of ways, but do we actually live it? You know, they all walk the talk sort of thing, basically.
You know, that was something I said in my lecture, too, about we have to get rid of the karma, but we also have to get rid of the fear, because people are afraid of each other. And you know, I travel all over the world, and I found people are just people everywhere you go. They all want things. They want to have a family. They want to have a good job and take care of their family. If more people traveled, there wouldn't be the wars and the violence. We'd see we're all alike.
You know, this whole collective consciousness thing at this particular point, I find it extraordinary that when you look at the world at the moment, you can see every system is breaking down. I mean, Tabash spoke last year about the present problems that are happening in the world economy at this particular time. These are just the old systems, the political systems, the intellectual systems, mental, everything is breaking down. But I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's just making way for the new systems that are being created. And they're probably similar to the old systems, but they're just with the concept of the godness in as well, basically. And there's that old phrase, science with the knowledge of God is beneficial. Science without the knowledge of God is destructive. And mm-hmm. and I think that it gets back to that whole thing about equations and formulas and the fact that, you know, you've got to adhere to the mind, body, spirit. And when you do, you have harmony. And when you don't, well, you don't have harmony. And harmony is the natural state of everything.
Yeah.
If you let it be.
It's also what's happening to the world. You see, the world is cleansing itself, you know, with the tsunamis, earthquakes, and all of these things that are happening. So everything is being
brought in. Isn't it interesting? People are so afraid of that because, you know, a lot of people are afraid they're going to die. But, of course, when we die, we just go home and everything's cool.
Yeah.
And so, it's just this whole attachment to their lives, to their bodies, to their things, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, even though who somehow understand spiritual energies, they still covet, you know, their possessions or whatever it is. And it's not so much about not having things, but I suppose it's more about what your attitude towards it is, basically.
Mm-hmm. Because that's what I found. You can have absolutely anything you want, but first you have to believe. And I always tell people to do it for the right reasons. Do it for positive.
Mm.
Because energy is just energy, and it could also go the negative way. You want to make sure you...
No, of course it can.
Always create for the positive.
I'll tell you a story about a client and who's a person who is a multi-billionaire, and, you know, he has life and businesses and everything all over the world, and he has what he wants, but he loves playing the pokey machines when he goes to cities, you see. And the thing is, he always wins. And I'm not talking like a couple of bucks. He will win $250,000, $500,000. And this annoys people enormously because they think, well, he's got all this money. Why is he so lucky? Why does he keep winning? And the reason is because whenever he wins, say he wins $250,000, what he will do, he will keep $50,000 for himself and he gives the $200,000 away.
Ah.
And so he always does this, you see. And so he keeps winning because, you know, it's like God said, all right, well, you take your bet, but you got to portion the rest out to whatever he does, basically. And he could just give the money to a pastor, like give it to a certain cause. And I've known this man for years and years, and it always happens. and he's got the right attitude, you see.
Okay.
But I think it's all relative. Yeah, it's relative to everyone's life, you know. I mean, obviously, if you're not financially independent, then it's like, okay, well, what aspect of myself can I give over? It could be a bit of a time to someone, or it could be do some community work or some involvement in some charity work or something. There's always something that we can do all the time. I've done a lot of volunteer work myself in the hospices, and you know, you realize that you're getting something out of it, but it's really about how we all serve each other. And
yeah.
I think that we all have to learn how to do that in a really unconditional way now.
That's the thing. Well, Blair, I'm watching the clock because when it gets to a certain time here, they're going to cut, they pull the plug anyway for the next.
Yeah, pull the plug. So is this time for goodbye, is it?
Yeah, the hour goes fast. It really does. But I do want to
tell
you.
Sure does, that's for sure.
I do want to tell you, Blair, I am planning on coming back. I have to go to China in October and November.
Yep.
And they're wanting me to come back through Australia while I'm there in Singapore. So I said, it's possible I'll make a circle and come back through New Zealand on the way home.
Yep.
So if it's possible, we'll all get together again then.
Well, I think that if we want to create that reality, then we're going to. And I think it would be extraordinary to you know, connect with you again. And I know that people here in New Zealand are definitely wanting more of you, that's for sure.
Okay,
and,
so anyway, it'll be the end of the year. But why don't you tell tell people how they can get a hold of you if they do want to reach you.
Okay, well, you can ring me here in Wellington, and telephone number is 384-3489, and the Wellington code is 04. Or if they wish to write to me, my P.O. box is 11556 Wellington, New Zealand.
And you don't have email, you said.
I prefer not to give that out because when I've done that in the past, then I get an enormous amount of people asking me all sorts of ridiculous things.
Yeah, they always want questions. But you don't have a website anyway.
No, no. I decided a long time ago that, and you know, I just do the work that I'm doing. I don't want to get tied to a whole lot of machines and things like that. I prefer just to channel the way that I'm doing. I mean, in the future, who knows, I may create something like that. But in the meantime, I'll just carry on in the way that I am.
Okay.
And that suits me.
So anyway, if anybody wants to get a hold of you, they can call you or write you. And
that's absolutely true.
It's Blair Styra, yeah. And you spell the last name. It's
S-T-Y-R-A.
S-T-Y-R-A. Blair Styra in Wellington.
Yes.
Okay, and I think we're coming to the time now I'm going to have to sign off. It's been wonderful speaking to you again.
Absolutely, and big embraces, lots of love to you.
And Julia says hello.
Oh, well, back to her as well, and just tell her thumbs up, you're doing well, girl.
Okay, but I'm going to have to sign off now, so I probably won't call you again, but we'll be emailing. And thanks.
I look forward to that.
And thanks for doing the show tonight, Blair.
Look, it's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me on your show. Bye for now.
All right. And we're going to have to sign off now. So good night, everybody.